Well, we evolved from monkeys, or we evolved from a primordial soup. It turns out we might, in fact, be evolved from rock. And the work that Professor Ross Large has done in this has been pretty earth-shattering, and he is about to receive the Royal Society of Tasmania's most distinguished recognition for that. Hi, Ross Large.
Oh, good morning.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah, great to be here.
How does your theory work, and where did the idea come from to look at the rock record to see where we might have evolved from?
Well, I mean, the rocks have always provided the basic information that paleontologists have worked with. So the fossil record, and we've got, you know, great fossil record that goes back 600 million years. But beyond 600 million years, we don't have any fossil record. So we use the geochemistry of the rocks to try and substitute. We call it a proxy. And we've been looking at the geochemistry of pyrite, which is one of the minerals in sedimentary rocks, and that tells us about the chemistry of the ocean, because the pyrite absorbs metal out of the ocean, and metals are vitally important for life. So that's really the connection. If you've got the right metals in the pyrite that tells us about the elements in the ocean, then we know the periods when there was the right sort of soup in the ocean, the right ingredients to make life occur.
Because what were the oceans most of the time in the history of this planet? What were they made of, and would they have supported life?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's where life started. Well, it's one theory. I think 90% of geologists and biologists would agree that life started in the ocean. But there is a group that think that life started around hot springs on land. You needed to have hotter water for life to be generated. That's generally accepted. And there's two ways. Either you have a hot spring under the ocean, or you have a hot spring on the land. But that's the most likely start for life.
How far has the work you've done spread?
Well, it's spread widely. I was just over at a conference in Boston 2 weeks ago with one of my postdoctoral fellows, and we gave presentations over there. I must admit there's a big controversy brewing because our ideas about how the ocean and atmosphere evolved are very different to the main ideas that are coming out of North America currently. So we've got a battle on our hands, but we feel we'll win out. There's no doubt about that.
And what's the role of volcanic activity in plate tectonics?
Well, really everything comes back to plate tectonics. The whole premise that we're generating now, and I only really realised it, I suppose, about 6 months ago, is that all these processes are cyclic. Now, they're cyclic on a very broad scale. You've got to think in terms of tens to hundreds of millions of years, and that's pretty hard for anyone to think of 100 million years. But that's what it turns out to be, and plate tectonics is cyclic. It's called the supercontinent cycle. When the plates come together to form supercontinents, and then they drift apart for another 100 million years, and then they gradually come together, they crash together and form another supercontinent. That's happened about six times in Earth's history, and that's the basic rhythm of the Earth. If you want to think of the Earth as having a heartbeat, then that's the heartbeat. I mean, it's a damn slow heartbeat, 100 million years between beats, but that's the way to think of it.
Everything is moving in this beautiful dance. Now, you can see Ross lecturing at Government House on Thursday, the rhythms of Earth and life, with these new ideas and these new discoveries, and he'll also be receiving Tasmania's most distinguished medal for the work. I hope they make the medal of a metal that you'll approve of.
Oh, I'm sure it will be.
No, pyrite? Yeah, or
well,
real gold?
That'd be exciting if it was pyrite.
And recognition for absolutely incredible work. When you're heading into an academic battle like this over the next few years for your theory, what do you do? How do you strategize?
Well, it comes down to two aspects. I mean, you've got to publish your ideas and get them widely distributed. Nowadays, with the internet, then a lot of the distribution of research goes through various channels through the internet, as you'd appreciate, not just the old libraries. You know, people don't go to libraries anymore, it seems. Not scientists, anyway.
No, they go for rock and rhyme when they've had their kids.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's publication and going to conferences and standing up there and telling people what your ideas are and having people question them. I mean, the problem with some conferences is there's no time for questioning. we went to two conferences in Boston, and the first one had a great period of time for questions, and people got stuck into one another and really, you know, delved into the science. And that's what we need, conferences with long periods for discussion.
Well, you get to hear tonight, and I'm sure you'll have a long period for discussion and questioning on Thursday at Government House. The lecture's called The Rhythms of Earth and Life Through Time. And there's also this great booklet as well that the Royal Society of Tasmania has put out that explains the ideas in brief, which even I could grasp.
Oh, terrific.
So if you can get that, anyone can. Ross, it's lovely to talk to you this morning.
Thanks very much, Rick.